Welcome to the Handy Guys Podcast, where we work together to complete that honey-do list, featuring answers to your questions and head-to-head tool challenges. Let's get started with the show with the Handy Guys, Brian and Paul.
All right, welcome to the Handy Guys Podcast, show number
2.
That's right, it's show number 2, and we're here once again to answer your questions, to field your email, and to help you with that honey-do list that you might have at home. And of course, if you want to submit a question or a phone call to our show, go to our website,
www.handyguyspodcast.com, and then click on the Contact Us link. There you'll find a web submission form. You can fill that out, and that will shoot us an email, or you can get the phone number from that link and call us up, and we might use your comments and questions on the air for our upcoming podcast.
Once again, I'm Paul, and that was Brian just talking. And today, we're going to talk a little bit about an article that was published recently by Brandy Melee from HGTV on how to spruce up your home. And in this little article, she talks about, goes through the rooms of the house and says that and these days that it may be hard to sell your home, or even if you're not trying to sell your home, a lot of people want to spruce up the house and are looking for ways to do that without breaking the bank.
There's a lot of inexpensive fixes you can do. And one of the things that people often forget, you know, when they're trying to fix up their house to sell it, they do all of these improvements and then they just sell the house and move on. Why not do those improvements now and enjoy the benefits?
That's right. So let's just go through some of her suggestions. And she starts out with the bedroom, and she says some cheap fixes are obviously painting the bedroom, perhaps upgrading the bedding and the window treatments as well.
Window treatments can get expensive, but paint, that's an easy fix.
Can't you just kind of hang an old sheet over the windows?
Yeah, we're not in college anymore, right?
Yeah, okay. Well, that's what I found out when I bought my first home and found out that the window treatments would break the bank. Okay, so she moves on and talks about closets. What can we do for the closets to help spruce things up there?
Well, if you're trying to sell your house, you've got to pull everything out of the closet that you don't need. The worst thing you could do is just have all your junk piled in the closet, because you want to give your potential buyers impression that there's plenty of storage space.
So that's not really a good place for the golf clubs and hockey sticks, perhaps some old books, rags.
If you got to rent one of those portable storage units, or where they deliver that to your house and you fill it up, or if you got to go rent a storage space somewhere, or find some place out of the way. You got to get it decluttered.
What we like to do is get one of those mobile storage units. I think it's also called a dumpster. And that's where we like to put all that stuff, get it out of there for good. All right, so that's what you can do with the bedroom. Moving on to the bathroom.
She suggests plumbing fixtures.
That's right, plumbing fixtures. Are these difficult to replace or upgrade?
They can be very simple. And, you know, there's some very, very inexpensive plumbing fixtures out there. If you're just going to sell your house and you've got, some crappy old looking fixtures, you know, $30 fixtures from, one of the big home improvement center stores will really look nice. Now, if you were going to live there, I don't think I'd put a $30 fixture in and leave it. But if you're just selling the house and it's going to make an improvement in the way things look, I'd say go for it.
Right. And what she suggests are the popular colors are the brush nickel and the oil rub bronze. So you might want to look into that. Okay, moving on. Also, she says if money is no object, of course, you can put in heated floors. But I'm sure most people aren't going to do that unless they're ripping up the entire bathroom.
Well, I did a bathroom remodel for my parents last spring, and we did a heated floor. And they love it. They turn the heat on when they get up in the morning. It's got a timer, so that it'll turn off after a couple of hours. But once that gets up to temperature, it holds that temperature for several hours. And they really enjoy it. And it was very, very easy and DIY friendly to do. It was an electric radiant system. So we had the backer board for the tile down. Then we strung the electric wires through. And then thin set right over top of that and tile, and it worked out great.
So I assume you hooked that up to a ground fault interrupt circuit when you do that?
I followed whatever the manufacturer's recommendations were. I don't recall if it required a ground fault or not. Again, check with the documentation that comes with whatever radiant floor system you're going to put in, and make sure you follow the recommendations.
And obviously you'd want to consult a professional or contractor if you weren't sure what you were doing. Okay, let's move on to the kitchen. The author suggests quick and easy fixes are updating lighting fixtures as well as plumbing fixtures. We already talked about the plumbing fixtures. What about lighting fixtures? That's pretty easy. Most homeowners can do that, right?
I would think if you're relatively handy, just a screwdriver and maybe a wire stripper or a pair of pliers, something like that, and you're good to go.
Obviously, you want to turn off the power at your breaker first. Test it. Make sure you're not messing with some hot wiring as well.
That's right. But again, same thing with lighting fixtures. There's a lot of really interesting, neat-looking lighting fixtures that aren't too expensive. And then there's some very, very expensive ones as well. So if you're going to be living in the house for a while, put in what you like. If you're going to be selling it, try not to put in something too trendy. But a $10 light fixture that has a nice look to it versus a fixture that maybe a builder put in the 50s could make a huge difference.
And of course, more expensive items in the kitchen would be new countertops using granite or concrete or other solid surfaces, stainless appliances, new flooring, new cabinetry. Of course, all that stuff is big bucks, but it does make a difference in the kitchen.
Right. Or even painting cabinets or refacing cabinets. So if you're going to be selling, you see these Flip This House shows and, they're always tearing out the cabinets and they get some designer that recommends, oh, well, just paint the cabinet, save your budget. You're going to be flipping it. I'm not that great of a painter. I'm not sure I would paint cabinets, but if I was wanting them painted, I would look at getting a professional in that could spray it. And there's also cabinet refacing that you can do yourself. A company called Rockler. We're going to be talking on this show later or in our next show about different places to get tools and so forth. And Rockler is one of those companies that has a great online presence, and they have a refacing kit. So essentially you're buying a wood veneer that you put on the face of the cabinets, and then you can buy new drawer fronts and new doors. All you got to do is give them a list of all your measurements and they'll ship you everything you need. And that could be significant savings versus buying all new cabinets.
Right. And don't fool yourself into thinking that painting your kitchen cabinets is a simple job, because really it's quite difficult to make it look right. You don't want to just slop on paint, but it requires, sanding, careful preparation, and using the right paint. Usually you may want to use a glossier paint and use the correct brushes. And that's something you'd want to consult an expert at a paint store about. And typically you also need to take all the cabinets apart, because you want to try to paint the doors on a level surface if possible. And as you said, even better is to spray on the paint to get a really smooth coat. So.
Right. And I'm not talking about the rattle cans that you buy at the hardware store. I'm talking about, I'm talking about a professional, sprayer.
Right. And I've seen it done with the brush as well, but it's very difficult. You got to be very careful to put on thin coats. You need to make sure that you prepare the surfaces properly and use the proper primer. And in some cases, it requires a lot of coats because if it's a very dark cabinet, or if it's a grainy cabinet, you have some various issues you have to contend with. So painting, while it does spruce things up, in many cases it makes things look much better, you have to be very careful with the kitchen cabinets, because you know if you're looking at kitchen cabinets and you see drips or imperfections, it's not a great improvement.
Yeah, you want to try to get as close to a factory finish as you can, and you're going to be hard pressed to do that in a DIY capacity.
All right, so moving on from the kitchen, we have other ways where you can spruce up your house. So the living room says the quick, easy fixes for sprucing up your house are to make sure your furniture is laid out in the best way possible for the flow of the room. And she suggests picking a focal point, perhaps a fireplace or a beautiful piece of furniture, and make renovations or changes in your living room around those focal point areas.
Yeah, you've got to have good traffic flow. And the other thing that I think is not covered in the article is sometimes, especially in older houses, you have kind of awkward rooms or awkward room layouts, where you have rooms that don't have an obvious purpose. And by staging those and setting them up and giving potential buyers an idea as to what they can use those unusual spaces for, Can be very helpful if you're going to be selling a house.
Right. And lastly, she talks about outdoor areas, particularly a deck. She says, if you don't have a deck, put one in. This has moved up to the top of the list with kitchens and baths for things that people look for when they're buying a new house.
Yeah. When I sold my old house a few years ago, it had really just a landing off the back, maybe 4 foot by 5 foot, sort of a deck, and it was old, it was rotten and so forth. And I just decided to build a small deck, just big enough for a small table and a couple of chairs, and really provide an entryway into the house, and used some of those aluminum, the brand is Decorator, balustrades, the pickets, if you will,
right.
But they're aluminum. They're a little pricey for a huge deck, but for a little deck like that, it made all the difference in the world. And the buyers that came and looked at the house all commented, "Hey, look, great, a new deck," and they were all excited about it.
And lastly, she mentions the front lawn. She says, if people don't like the outside, how will you ever get them inside? Of course, the front lawn is important to spruce up. But let's move on from this, from sprucing up. We've talked a lot about painting, and it just so happens that we got our first question this week on our website. It was regarding paint, and this question is from Phil from Pennsylvania, and he writes, "Hey, handy guys. In the past month, I've heard two different cases of a wife picking a color from a sample, and after the husband got 2 gallons in one case and 3 gallons in another, the custom paint, it was generally agreed that the color was not right. It was too bright in both cases. Of course, the paint could not be returned. How is a guy to pick the right custom paint color without having to chalk the first 2 gallons under the category of lessons learned? Your loyal listener, Phil from Pennsylvania." So he has a good question, and I think a lot of us have gone through this, where you look at the little swatches at the paint store, and you think you have the right color, you bring them home, you hold them up, and then you get the can of paint, and you bring it home, and it looks like you're that's not the paint you picked out.
Right. It never looks the same in the store as it does at home, and even on the chip, it never looks the same as what you would expect once you get a large area covered in that paint. So what we're suggesting people do if they're in that dilemma and they're picky about their paint color, there's a couple of vendors out there that sell little, probably 2 to 4 ounce jars of paint, just enough to cover maybe a 2 foot by 4 foot area on the wall. They just cost a couple of bucks. Pick, find your color that you think you like, get that jar, and then get the next lighter, get the next darker, the next shade different, you know, maybe get 4 or 5 of them, put them all up on the wall, and then pick the one you like. Make sure you keep track of which one is which when you do that. But who sells those little containers?
Maybe Benjamin Moore, but I'm not positive.
Yeah, Benjamin Moore definitely sells them, and that's the brand of paint that I always use whenever possible. It's a good quality paint. I think you might also find those at Sherwin-Williams. I've never seen them at Lowe's or Home Depot, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a new thing. And if your paint store does not have these small sizes, I would still recommend that you get a can of the small size that they sell. If it's a quart, whatever it is, before you go ahead and buy a gallon, you'll save yourself a few dollars, believe me, because you're almost never going to be right on the first try.
Yeah, and I'd recommend putting that on with a roller. Because that's what you're going to do large walls with anyway, and you don't want to leave brush marks that maybe when you do your final coat won't blend in really well. So they sell these little 2-inch foam rollers that come with a little plastic pan and everything, just for a couple of bucks. One of those is ideal for putting on this sample paint.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about buying paint, because I know this issue comes up a lot. And I see people get very frustrated at times, whether it's the color or even more so the service and help that you get. And this is my concern, is that a lot of people are buying paint at the big box stores. And while these stores are great for buying a lot of things, one of the problems I've had is that the service at the big box stores for paint is very minimal. They know how to mix paint. And that's about it. And sometimes the quality of the paint that they sell is also questionable. So what I always recommend people is just go to a local paint center and find one where the people in the paint at the paint store really know what they're talking about. In general, they do, because they sell probably most of their paint to contractors and they need to know their stuff. And if you go in on a weekend, they generally expect a how-to people that are coming in to paint their own home. And I've always found that they have a lot more information. If you have a question, you know, you're going to paint concrete, or you're going to paint a wood floor, or you're going to paint plaster, or you're going to paint drywall, they're not just going to sell you one type of paint, but they're going to provide a paint for you that is specific to your needs.
Yeah, I think that applies to a lot of different things, but paint especially. You know, you find a store where you're going to get some good advice and you stick with it and support your local guys in that endeavor. And you're right, those painting stores, the Benjamin Moore stores, the Sherwin-Williams, the MABs, and so forth, they're selling to contractors, and their reputation is on the line. We talk bad about some paints. I'll share a story. I bought some paint at a big box store. I won't mention the name, but one of the brands that's even very highly recommended in Consumer Reports, as a matter of fact. Painting a yellow over a very light lavender color took 4 stinking coats. 4 stinking coats.
Right.
It was a disaster. We spent way more on paint than we needed to. And but the person that bought the paint that I was helping out said, oh, I got a good deal. And oh, it was rated number 1 in Consumer Reports. Well, I'll tell you. It was not a good quality paint. If we would have gone over and picked up a gallon of Benjamin Moore, we would have been done in one coat. I'm convinced of it.
Yeah, and in general, I recommend, and I've used Benjamin Moore, like them. We have a regional store here called MAB in the Philadelphia area. It was actually bought by Sherwin-Williams. It was also great paint. In fact, their exterior paint, their seashore paint, is considered the best in this whole area for holding up in exterior situations. But I like Sherwin-Williams as well. But the key, in my opinion, also is just not to nickel and dime the paint. Time is more costly than the paint. And a lot of times I'll have 2 or 3 grades. I generally get the best grade almost no matter what. Sometimes it's questionable whether I'm really it's a big improvement from the highest grade to the medium grade, but I never think twice about it because it takes a lot of time to paint and I want to make sure I have the best coverage possible. And in some cases I can get away with one coat.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just, you know, here we are in my finished basement and looking around at the walls, new drywall, 1 coat of primer, 1 coat of paint. I don't know. How does it look to you, Paul?
Except for the pencil marks, it's not bad. Or is that spilled Coke or something? But actually, it's excellent. And you would never know that it was 1 coat.
Now, you painted, didn't you paint a very bright color in one of your rooms or in a previous house or something like that?
I got away. Well, we did a red in a bedroom, and I did that in 1 coat. Now, it was a flat paint, and flat paint has a lot better coverage. Flat is generally the opposite of glossy. It's your non-glossy, and usually you'll get a better coverage with flat paint, depending on the color, of course.
But red is often considered one of the hardest colors to get 1 coat coverage.
That may be. I don't know. I was amazed. I got the best possible paint. That was a Benjamin Moore paint in that case, and it was awesome because when you're cutting in with a dark color like that against a white ceiling, that's hard enough, so you don't want to have to bother also painting the walls twice. But, you know, I also used a high-grade paint in the basement, but it was an eggshell call it matte. They call it matte, I think, at Benjamin Moore, a matte finish.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
They've got a matte. I think an eggshell is typically 1 sheen up from a matte.
Right. It's in eggshell is typically between your flat and your semi-gloss.
Right.
It's just a little bit glossy, but it's not a semi-gloss. Typically, you use semi-gloss on wood surfaces and trim, and your eggshell or flat use on walls. Eggshell is a little bit more, because it's a little bit more glossy, it can clean up a little better. It withstands traffic and marks and things like that a little better than flat. Flat is great, but the only problem with it is that it tends to pick up dirt or scratching marks or, you know, bumps a little bit easier, you know.
Yeah, it's than not as durable. Glossier.
Right.
Yeah.
So it just depends, again, on the make as well. The best make flat is probably better than the worst made gloss as far as protecting surfaces. So, all right. Well, that's enough about paint.
Do we want to talk about application of paint, rollers, brushes, what to look for there?
Well, yeah, we could talk about that this week. Why don't we close out the show and just say a few words about applying paint to the walls and about the best techniques and the best tools.
So I think the key technique for any painting project is a technique called keeping a wet edge. So that has to do with when you're cutting in. Cutting in is the process of going around your doors and your windows, you know, where you have a change in paint color. And typically that's done with a 2 or 2.5 inch angled brush. The pros will do it freehand. A lot of people like to use painter's tape, blue tape, masking tape, something like that to mask it off. But when you do that cutting in, you don't do the whole room and then come back and paint in the middle with your roller. You try to do one section at a time and then paint over that while it's still wet with the wall. And that will really minimize any brush marks that you can see.
Right. Most pros will tell you that they paint one wall at a time. They cut in and paint it before they move to the next wall, as opposed to cutting in all around the entire room, then painting the walls. And the reason they do that is because in case different gallons or of paint are mixed slightly differently, if there's any slight changes, right, that you won't see it when you do it that. Now, I don't like doing that because once I start cutting in, I like to keep going until, right, I'm all the way around the room. So I'm not that picky, but, you know, it may, you know, maybe that may reflect in my work.
Right. But yeah, it's not only that coloring, but it's also keeping that wet edge, because then, right, that cutting in blends in with the rolling that you do.
Okay. So what about brushes and rollers? How do we decide? We walk into a paint store. If you go into a big box store or a paint store, you're going to see a huge array of items, different products. First of all, let's just start with the edging tools. Because it used to be, if you wanted to cut in or edge, you would use a paintbrush, a sash brush, a 2, 2.5 inch brush, maybe an angled brush, maybe a round brush. But you used a brush. Now, when I go into the big box stores, I probably see 10 to 15 different products on improving on the brush on for the edging in.
Yeah, I have not had much success with those. You've got the different little pads, and some of those pads have little rollers on the edge. To me, they're all gimmicks. A 2.5 inch angled brush, synthetic bristles if we're using latex paint, and you just cut it in, and you get good enough. I do it freehand. I don't mask anything off.
Now, I know some people swear by the pads and the with the wheels on everything, and they swear by them, and they like them, and I've tried them, and in some cases they work. Usually, I have more success when there's not as much of a contrast between the walls and the ceiling. So let's say I have a white ceiling and a real light pink wall for a girl's room, a bedroom, then I can get away with it, because when you use those, the line for where it cuts in isn't exactly at the corner, but because there's not as much of a contrast in colors, you don't really notice it. Whereas if you're doing a dark colored wall and a white ceiling, you see that line isn't in the corner.
What I found when using those, like, I would get a little bit of paint on the wheel or something, and then it would transfer onto the surface that it wasn't supposed to get painted, you know, like along a ceiling edge or something like that.
Yeah, you have to be careful with those. There's no doubt about it, but they can work, and I think they're worth trying. But some people like them, some people don't. Personally, I've used them in certain situations, but I'm like you. I find that most of the time, the best technique is to use a good brush, which we'll talk about in a minute here, and to move slowly, take your time, and get it right the first time. And if you move slowly and take your time and try to really get a straight edge there, it's going to look great.
Yeah.
So let's talk about brushes. How do I pick out a brush? There's usually, I would say, about 3 grades of brushes at the big box stores. You're going to find your real cheapy brushes in a grab bin where they just throw a whole bunch of brushes for 99 cents or something like that. This is at least of the traditional brushes, and then you'll have different levels of brushes. You also have foam brushes and some other non-traditional brushes.
Yeah, the foam brushes are great for little touch-up jobs, but you know, I wouldn't use one of those for cutting in. A better quality brush, the key thing for me is the bristles stay in place. Nothing worse than painting and having a bristle fall off a brush and then get stuck in your paint and having to try to pull it out or something like that. It's a pain in the neck.
Yeah, so I'm a little bit, I think my recommendation in general, like the paint, I get the best brush I can find, usually the more expensive ones.
Yep.
Purdy makes some great brushes there, and there's some other brands.
Yep. And you use the synthetic brushes for your latex, and then,
right,
there's what they call China bristle, and you'll use those for oil-based paint.
Go into your paint store, ask ask the man or woman behind the counter. Typically at the paint stores, they're extremely helpful. They'll tell you exactly what you need. I wouldn't necessarily go into the local paint store on Monday morning at 9 a.m. because that's when the contractor, they're overwhelmed with contractors. However, I found that on Saturdays and later on in the day, most paint stores are extremely helpful. And the one thing is, if you get a good brush, it can cost you 15, 20 bucks for a good brush.
Yeah, or more.
But
you clean it.
Yes.
You know.
And, you know, I used to think that cleaning was such a pain, I wanted to just use it and throw it away or whatever. But what I found, the key to cleaning a brush is get yourself a wire comb, and they sell them at the paint stores for cleaning the brush.
Absolutely.
It's a wire comb and perhaps a wire mesh brush along with it. And the mesh brush, which we can put a picture on our website perhaps, is really good for cleaning at the heel of the brush where the paint dries. Whereas the wire comb is just...
Well, you should never get paint up into the heel of the brush, right?
It happens, man. It happens no matter what. Just setting the thing down, it happens. So, but get those tools because they make quick work of cleaning the brushes. You can clean those brushes with those tools in just a matter of maybe 2 minutes in hot water, 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah, I think that's key. You got to get one of those, get a good brush. And, you know, I have a couple of my good brushes that... no one else is allowed to use but me because I keep them meticulously clean and they'll last me a very long time.
Yeah, I've got a couple of brushes I've probably used for several rooms, maybe 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 rooms, some of them large. I just keep using them over and over again and they're still in great shape. You obviously want to also form them correctly when you're done with them, let them dry. You want to hang them if possible. So we're about out of time right now and we're out of time to talk about paint, but we still need to talk about rollers and how you paint the walls. We'll do that next time in show number 3.
Very good.
If you have a question about painting or anything else around the house, please contact us at
handyguyspodcast.com. Click on the contact link and you'll be directed to the form to fill out to ask your question, or the phone number for the call-in option is also on that same page.
That's all for this show. Until next time,
we're the Handy Guys.
Later. Bye.